This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes.
All right, buddy, welcome to the Sherman Show. Today is April 11th, 2022. I'm Jeff Sherman, along with my co-host, Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
And today we are broadcasting from the ETF Exchange here in Miami. And I have my longtime friend with me, Dave Lavelle. Those of you who don't know Dave, he is a managing director. He's the global head of ETFs at Grayscale Investments. They are the world's largest digital currency asset manager. And his expertise is too extensive to list here.
Oh, right? That's quite kind of you.
Yeah. And so prior to joining Grayscale, he was the CEO of Alerian and five network global indices. So he's got a lot of experience in the ETF space. He's built a lot of brands and platforms. That's where I got to know Dave. But Dave, welcome to the show, first of all.
Thanks so much. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Well, and so with that, I gave you a very horrible introduction. Why don't you give us a more thorough introduction about how you got in the business, you know, how you became Dave Lavelle.
Yeah.
And, you know, tell me more about Grayscale as well.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, naturally, I was a pre-med theology major. So obviously, that led me to Wall Street, right? I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You're looking for God and being able to operate.
Exactly. You know? No, so that is the truth. I was a pre-med theology major. And I took one finance class my senior year in college from this hedge fund manager, a guy named Bernie McGinn. And I was
Bernie
like,
what?
McGinn.
Oh, I was just, it was a joke.
Yeah, exactly. And so I had never thought to put my kind of like math and science brain to finance. And so long story short, I limped my way down onto the floor of the American Stock Exchange, where I started trading small cap cash equities, closed end funds, listed derivatives, structured notes, and ultimately ended up kind of getting into trading ETFs. And after running a trading shop for a while and ended up kind of working my way up through the ranks there, ended up moving into, running NASDAQ's ETF platform, spent some time there. And then I went over to State Street where I met you and then ultimately kind of went to Alerian, and now I'm living in the crypto space. So I always like to say I'm kind of have lived in the key four legs of the ETF ecosystem stool, indexing, trading, markets and exchanges, and then obviously distribution and bringing products to market. But now that I'm at Grayscale, you mentioned it, it's the largest crypto asset manager in the world. We have 18 products in market. We have one ETF. The rest of our products are 33 Act Delaware Grantor Trust structured products. We're most widely known, largest Bitcoin fund that actually holds Bitcoin. So we do a bunch of different things, but mostly. Certainly focused on the crypto space.
Yeah, but walk me through that structure too. What makes that structure so important, and why have you guys been successful with that? I know there's been a lot of differences out there, whether it's a futures based.
Yeah.
And we don't have to get into the backwardation contango and all the stuff that happens there,
right?
But and there's been the challenges with kind of the spot side. So what makes your structure so useful to the end client?
Yeah. So the genius behind bringing our products to market is in 2013, when the trust was initially envisioned by the founder of our parent company, a guy named Barry Silbert. It was really genius. And the idea was, and I've seen the deck where he outlined it in 2013. He said, Bitcoin is going to be a digital store of value. It is going to be an asset allocation in individuals' portfolios. They're going to want to utilize it, as a component and a building block in their portfolios. And therefore, they're going to want it to sit in their portfolios alongside products like GLD and other commodity exposures. And so GLD, as many of you know, is a 33 Act Delaware Grantor Trust. And it's trading in markets on exchanges like an exchange traded product. And so, our products were,
and they actually house the physical gold.
There's rocks in the vault. It's a pretty simple product, right? we used to have pictures of the rocks in the vault, actually, which is kind of cool. But the point with the structuring of GBTC was just that, to structure it so it was a very simple structure, Bitcoin in a 33 Act product. And so given that the regulatory environment in 2013 was not such that you could launch it in an ETF wrapper, we started with that private placement in a 33 Act Delaware Grantor Trust. And after a year seasoning period, that product became publicly quoted on the OTC markets. And then after that, in 2020, it became an SEC reporting company. And so essentially, you know, we voluntarily have allowed the SEC to come in and take a look at all the financials and look under the hood of the product. So it's, you know, was a real unique use case for the 33 Act structure. It was something that offered investors access to Bitcoin in a really credible way. And honestly, at a time when it wasn't easy to access Bitcoin directly, and there weren't the Coinbases of the world that made it easy for investors to do so with a high degree of confidence, and those that weren't really technically capable could get access to it in a private placement, you know, if they were an accredited investor, or after a year, enter the public quotation market on OTC to be able to buy and sell it, just like they would buy and sell a security along their other.
So this is assets. This antedates Matt Damon going on TV and telling me that fortune favors the bold, right?
That's correct.
Yeah,
that's
okay,
correct.
Okay,
that's
excellent. Correct. So yeah, I figured that. Yeah. So jokes aside, I love that little riff. I still can't believe that. And by the way, South Park crushed that guy on that. It was pretty funny.
I missed that.
Yeah, I'll show that to you while we're here.
Okay.
We'll do it offline for compliance purposes. But explain to me why investors should be buying crypto. Is this just a pure speculation? I've heard you talk about the digital store of value.
Yeah.
I've heard people give me the case for inflation, fiat hedge.
Yeah.
Walk me through your thesis.
You know, at the end of the day, it depends where you are in the world is how I think it dictates how you think about and how you engage with Bitcoin. And look, we're in a wealth of riches. We have in the US market, we have, you know, a financial system and a banking system that we can trust. It's not to say that it is totally immune from inflation, but it's something that our government and our financial system, look, you could speak, you know, at length about this, keeps in check. But in other, you know, regimes and other governments, you know, you have rampant inflation and you think about, you know, how confident you can engage with that your own currency in a very different way. And there's different trust parameters associated with, you know, how you think about the currency that you're using in your home market. But for us, and I'll go into that a little bit later when we talk through some other things, but this really is a digital store of value. And it's a, you know, kind of a digital gold, if you will. And it offers many of the same, many of the same functions that you would align with gold in your portfolio, certainly just in a digital format. Now, the difference is there's also, the opportunity for an investor to, you know, have some appreciation as well. And that's a little bit different than kind of what you would think about from gold in terms of how gold is the underpinning of the rest of our market. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly a speculative aspect to it because it's something that's new. But, you know, before anything can become a currency or has ever become a currency in the history of kind of currencies in the world, something has to become a store of value. The thing that's strange about this is becoming a store of value kind of within our lifetime, as opposed to something that's taken 2000 years. Right.
Right. Right.
But I think that, you know, I'm keen to get into the different aspects of how, you know, people look at Bitcoin, but, you know, from our perspective, it's certainly a digital store of value.
All right. So on that, go ahead, Sam.
I was going to ask Dave. So with that, I think one can buy the narrative. You know, they may not agree with it that you just played out for Bitcoin, but what about for some of these altcoins that are out there? Trevor mentioned the word speculative, or those, but what are your thoughts on those? So I can't even pronounce some of these coins, but you know, some of the ones that just, it makes a roller coaster look pretty smooth, you know, in the path that they take.
I'm glad you used the phrase altcoin versus the other phrase that's used for some of them.
Yeah, well, you know, different people think of them in different ways. You know, some are more more G-rated than others, but that's fine.
Yeah.
This is PG probably here, right?
Yeah, yeah. Sam's definitely a PG kind of guy.
So look, we at Grayscale have put a ton of diligence into the types of products that we have brought to market. And, you know, there's someone else much smarter than me that's much closer to the pulse of the innovation in different cryptos that will tell you how many new coins are coming to market every week. And it's a lot. But that doesn't mean that, you know, that gives those coins any sort of credibility associated with what their kind of future use case might be for them. When you start thinking about, you know, protocols like Ethereum, Cardano, Solana, these are platforms that other technologies are being built upon. Mm-hmm. And so someone else is showing that there's a credibility that's associated with the technology that has been built. And to me, that gives a different level of kind of diligence that's happened in the market from people who are technically capable to determine whether or not these technologies are built for success. But, you know, how many times have we talked about ensuring that when you're investing in something that you know what you're investing in? And if you don't do it, or find someone who can actually give you some, you know, education on exactly how that fits into your portfolio or doesn't. The difference is the decentralized nature of what's happening in crypto right now is, you know, can be anti in that sense, which is precisely why Grayscale has brought products to market that can offer a higher level of diligence. We have a tremendous amount of experience in bringing products to market. We've diligenced the coins. We've looked at the, you know, underlying technology. We've looked at the founders that have put them in place and, you know, put them in a wrapper that allows investors to, you know, to invest with confidence.
So let's talk about those different kinds of things. You mentioned a few off the top of your head.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about recommending some digital currencies or digital assets, I think as people say now, because I noticed you're shy to use the word currency, right? Because that store of value a little bit, right?
Yeah.
At least the stability of it. But, you know, when you think about that, how do you think about people who want access to digital assets, right? Should they just be speculating on a few, looking for that big winner? Do you think it's, you know, this diversification principle? Obviously, you've diligenced a lot of them, right? So you guys have a high degree of confidence in that. But how should an investor think about this? Should they go, you know, all in on the digital gold story?
Right.
Or should they be trying to get just access to different technologies to see who the winners and losers could ultimately be?
One of the most exciting things when I joined, joined Grayscale was when I looked at their products. At that point in time, we only had two diversified products in market. We had kind of like what we would consider to be like the S&P 500, the large cap fund, and then we had a decentralized finance fund.
And so it really is on market capitalization.
Yeah.
How you weight the exposure.
Yeah. And so I was looking at this and I was like, you know, I was coming straight off of running an indexer and I was thinking to myself, oh my gosh, like think about all that we've learned in equity markets and bond markets and other kind of what we would call traditional markets. And thinking about the ways that you can take just basic factor indexing, I mean, momentum strategies and equal weight strategy, right?
Right.
And so when people, and the first thing that people ask me is like, okay, what should I invest in? I was like, I don't know yet. I've only been here for a month. and you know, market cap is certainly one way to take a look at those exposures. But there's so much opportunity to create diversified exposures and kind of, you know, engaging in, you know, index-based strategies. And we have a sister firm, you know, so Digital Currency Group is our parent company and Grayscale is one of our companies. We have a sister company called CoinDesk. And CoinDesk Indices is building out a digital asset, you know, classification system. So the GICS in, you know, equity land.
Yeah.
And we have DAX, the digital asset classification system.
All right.
And DAX is essentially like building out sector strategies so that we can actually, you know, build portfolios and build products that are aligned with those, you know, different sectors. And I think we're so early that these opportunities, as you just asked the question, is like, okay, like where should you go and which single asset should you go with? And I said, pump the brakes on that. Bitcoin is established and has a strong market cap. Ethereum is established, has a very strong market cap. Everything else is somewhat speculative, despite the fact that Cardano and Solana have had like, you know, two that have had some, you know, Avalanche and others have had some like, you know, their day in the sunshine.
Yep.
It could be great, maybe not, who knows. Find a diversified strategy that allows you to take advantage of some of the anchor tenants in the portfolio.
Yep.
And then you have an opportunity to have some outperformance with some of the smaller cap names. And so I think there's a tremendous amount of growth that's really exciting. That's what got me so excited once I got under the hood of Grayscale and said, it's like endless, the opportunities.
Well, now your excitement, your fervor gets me excited about it too, because my little wonky math brain goes, wait a second, you have a highly volatile underlying asset, you have potentially low correlation.
Right.
All I think of is this should be an equally weight portfolio.
Exactly.
Right. That's the first thing.
Exactly. This is exactly what I said. So I sat down with the product team and I got like my new product team and I start getting all fired up and I'm like, guys, let's do an equal weight. And they were like, oh, it's a great idea. We never really thought about that. Or like, you know, let's do a momentum strategy. And they were like, oh my gosh, like never thought about putting a momentum tolerance on it or an RSI score or whatever. And then we kind of pause and think, well, wait a minute, if something's really going to run and you have an equal weight strategy, yeah, you're selling your winners yeah. and you're like buying your losers. Right. So it gave us the opportunity to really be thoughtful about it. And me bringing some indexing perspective and some kind of ETF product development perspective that really had kind of, you know, a credible voice to a team of really, really, really talented crypto people who brought, you know, tremendous perspective about the underlying, you know, protocols and the teams and the founders that launched these technologies. And it has made like a really good match of skill set.
So that to me sounds like fundamental research. I don't know about you, Sam, but I mean, that's what it kind of sounds like to me, that, you know, the underlying technologies are critical here too, right? Because so much I think is made out of this digital space that people want to sell you, this is going to take over the world.
Or
Ethereum, everything's going to run through this part of the market. And so, you know, how do you find those experts in there? Are these cryptographers? You know, I just watched The Imitation Game the other day. I guess I got a little crypto in the mind. And maybe make sure that wasn't The Crying Game, because that's a different movie. So I want to bring that out there. But like, where do you find the people that understand these stuff? Are these programmers? Or you know, where are you harvesting this talent from?
Yeah.
Because they're not finance people, I wouldn't think.
No. What I would tell you is that the people that kind of, you know, by background look like the three of us, who have had, you know, 20 plus year kind of careers in traditional Wall Street, are now coming into the marketplace and trying to put some structure around, you know, startups and very aggressive and really impressive teams of young, talented, you know, men and women. And, you know, one of the things that I think was a little bit, you know, shocking to me, if I'm being really candid, I'm like one of the oldest guys in the firm by a long shot, but
you still have gray hair. That's amazing.
But to tell you the truth, I don't believe I come with a big ego about anything. And I'm so eager to learn. And I really learned from some, you know, men and women on our team that are in their early 20s because they've lived it. Right. Yeah. And, you know, when, you know, I don't walk around the office admitting that, you know, there wasn't free email when I graduated college, right? I mean, you know, they wouldn't believe me if I said that to them, right?
If you did, it was because of college gave it to you. So you're $25,000, which was cheap back then, I guess.
It was a deal. You know,
but we actually did it.
Yeah. But when we look for, like, here's a great example. We're trying to figure out and you know, make a decision around, you know, new product development roadmap. Do we go with, you know, active strategies, index-based strategies? You know, the truth is, if you are someone who could build an active strategy in crypto, you're starting a hedge fund,
right?
And you're building it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so the talent pool is very interesting.
And you have a significant first mover advantage, right? Like, if you know what you're doing.
Yeah. It's super interesting to me, but the reality is we, you know, I won't go beyond what I'm about to say right now, because I'll get far outside of my comfort zone, but the Ethereum merge that is, you know, projected to come up in the next, you know, few months.
And this is ETH 2.0.
Yeah. And, it, you know, it's going from a proof of work to proof of stake. And this is like a really, really complex technology issue. And they're working on a solution. And the individual within, you know, the DCG team who explained it to us last week, he was a super, super impressive guy, but and he's close to half my age, but he's been living it, you know, and he's been as plugged in as you can possibly be plugged in to that, you know, fundamental understanding of how these protocols work, who are making the decisions and how the decisions are being made.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember the first analogy that really got, you know, really kind of hooked me on the power of a decentralized piece of technology. As a member of my team said, think about Uber. And, you know, you have a bunch of drivers, and they're kind of sitting on this Uber technology. And, you know, there's lots of talk about how much money Uber makes versus how much money the drivers make. But imagine a scenario where you kind of get rid of the Uber platform and you have all the drivers who are doing the driving and also owning the platform.
Mm-hmm.
You could imagine a scenario where currently $26 ride nets, you know, $8 to the driver. I'm kind of making this up, but you know, you can imagine a scenario in the future where that $26 ride is now, you know, $18 and the driver's netting 12. because you're cutting that layer out and you're kind of going into this, you know, kind of, you know, shared resource, and there's an ownership at the user level. And that was the one that was like really tangible for me, not truly understanding the nuances of the protocol in a way where I could, you know, technically understand it. Of course, now time has passed and I've become more ingrained into it. But that was one for me, and maybe for some of your listeners, that say, oh, that makes sense to me. Like, yeah, now I get it, you know? I don't know. I rambled a bit, but sorry. Sorry, Sam. Go ahead.
Well, Dave, I was going to say, you know, I've known you for a while now too. And you know, when we first met, you know, you're more on the, you're on the traditional side of finance, yeah, I have to say. And now I see you on this, this cutting edge of crypto here. So I have I'm on another podcast too, you know, Moonlighting on Sherm here on the Sherman Show. And I, you know, this podcast is called
At least you finally admitted it.
That's right. You know what I mean? It's called Monday Morning Minutes. And I do that with Jeff Mayberry, who I think you also know.
Yeah, yeah.
We asked for submissions for questions from our listeners. And I did get a question that I thought would be right up your alley, given your background of traditional finance and then and crypto as well. So
yep, go for
it. Listener had, you know, he was talking about crypto within an asset allocation framework, particularly for younger investors. And he wanted to ask about the traditional stock bond portfolio, if that, especially the bond side, is that permanently off the table for younger retail investors based on some of these pressures that we've been seeing in the economy, rising prices in everyday life, either at the pump or at the restaurant or at the dinner table. But
yeah,
a lot of these younger retail investors are now positioning themselves where they're have a big piece to stocks, a big piece to, you know, perhaps crypto assets or digital assets there, and perhaps even a little bit of real estate rather than owning bonds, because as he says it, you know, they would rather go out on the risk curve rather than be side by side with the Fed, who have suppressed interest rates basically since the global financial crisis. So just want to hear, you know, your thoughts on that for especially younger investors who have a longer holding period.
Yeah, we actually, it was just today that a NASDAQ study came out. And I think it cited that, you know, a 6% allocation to crypto was what was, you know, the consensus. And, you know, it's very funny. It's a question that I've also been asked a number of different ways from other people, not just in like finance, but, you know, friends and family, like, what should I do? Mm-hmm. And I read, I believe it was Rick Edelman that said, you know, essentially he said, and I'm not quoting him, but the summary was, you know, you can afford to lose what you put into it, but you can't afford to miss out on the game. And so
Pascal's wager.
Yeah, exactly. Right? There you go. Yeah, right? You see, you know,
there's your little theology background.
There you go.
I studied about you.
So the bit there for me, as I'm thinking about how, you know, investors should think about it is look, it is absolutely volatile. There is absolutely can be a speculative nature to it if you really go out that risk curve, but identify what portion of your portfolio you're willing to, you know, risk in that way. And maybe you offset that with, you know, a portion of your bond, like a portion of bonds, which is going to be far less risky, right? And so maybe there's something here where, you know, you build that in and pair it with a bond portfolio, which is something you guys are going to be obviously much more, you know, well equipped to answer. But it's about understanding that as a young investor, I mean, think about the way that we, at least for me, that I would have invested differently when I was 23 years old. I mean, it's crazy. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, I had like this buffer of cash for a rainy day. And I'm like, what rainy day? I've got like nothing to worry about except like wings and, you know, beers. Like, right. You know, yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. And my theta decay on my option portfolio.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. You know, I'm going to buy a covered call here. And I'm, you know, oh man, it's crazy when I think about it.
Well, so let's talk about some of that risk side of the equation. So I like framing it from the perspective of that, it's the opportunity cost, right? It's almost that you can't watch everyone get rich around you by doing something and not have something. So you talked about momentum as potentially a strategy, but also like, how do you think about the risks of these things? Obviously you guys are doing your diligence.
Yeah.
And it's kind of accepted that there is volatility.
Yeah.
Right. And so that it just starts with that. Right. And then, so you know, we used to be the gunslingers at Double Line. Sam and I were for running a commodity portfolio, right? Because they were like, how does this thing move 2% in a day?
right.
You know, that's like a quarter of what's been a year of returns in recent environments. And I'm like, well, that's nothing. Have you seen natural gas?
Yeah.
And natural gas looks like a bond
relative
to some of these.
Right.
So how does one kind of quantify that risk framework? Is it purely, are you just, you know, telling people that it should be in this speculative part of your book, you know, if you're talking about the mental accounting side, or is there a way to think about integration of those risks? But, you know, how do you think about that? And, you know, how do you, more importantly, how do you see people using it? Right. So you talk to clients. So
how about this? Advisors. Let's just hop in the seat of an advisor right now and what they're seeing and what we're hearing. First of all, largely, if you go with like the largest, global bank, broker dealer, wealth management platforms, largely you can't get any crypto into your portfolio.
You can't get some bond funds out there if you're listening too, by the way.
So look, I respect the process. There's obviously like a suitability concern and compliance and all those things, and I understand it.
But then their banking arm trades it.
That is the hypocrisy of it. And look, similarly, like our regulators are grappling with the same, you know, concerns around compliance and transparency and manipulation and all that kind of stuff. But the reality is, it's not stopping people from investing in it.
Right.
So, you know, you can go in a self-directed way and get access to it.
Yep.
And so the advisors are faced with another dilemma, which is like, all right, I can't get my clients into this. They're asking for it.
They're going to do it.
Right. And what's that going to do to my book? I'm going to be losing assets to it. Okay. And so, you know, not to fast forward into why, you know, an ETF would be so great. Look, ETFs are building blocks for advisors' portfolios.
Yep.
You know, 15, 20 years ago, they were skeptical on the ETF and they were skeptical on anything that was inside an ETF. Now people know the ETF works and it's really a battle test.
I remember you in our offices teaching me about ETFs. Like, so I feel like this is the same thing with digital currency.
You know, but it's true. Listen, yeah. Like the ETF is no longer, it's no longer what's being questioned or has concern, and it's not a financial weapon of mass destruction. It's actually a point of credibility for the asset that's being put in it, which is, you know, giving a lot of people pause as well. We don't want to put something into an ETF that we think has, you know, some sort of underlying principle, underlying behavior that doesn't fit. So I respect all that, but as we talk about what advisors are facing, their clients are asking them about crypto every single day. How should I get exposure? What's the right way to do it? Can I get it here? Are there other products I can get, you know, beta replication of it? Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is it's, you know, it's taking a high degree of education, and the general demographic of the advisor community is not one that's looking to learn something new.
Right.
And, you know, as investors are, you know, becoming younger and younger, we have this transition of wealth, generational transition of wealth.
They're not getting younger. You're just getting older, Dave.
Sorry, you know, I forgot about that.
They're not getting younger.
It's math. Just us. Yeah. He's a math major, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really trying to figure out how advisors are going to bring solutions to their clients.
All right, let me go one more that may be a little offensive to you, but I'm going to do
it's fine.
Anyway.
It's fine.
You know, this is where, you know, having a relationship before allows me to cross the line. But what about all the hacks I read about?
Oh,
you
know?
I mean,
yeah,
so there, yeah. These are all over the news. This is where, you know, you mentioned suitability. It made me think about that. So we had, what is it, the Axie Infinity hack, where it's a video game, I think, where essentially 625 million walks out the door. You've got, you know, was that Bitfinex that was like, what, 2 or 3.6 billion, something like that?
I think it was like 4.5 billion that they found 3.6.
They only found, right? And then I go to the point of like, you know, every time that someone extorts somebody, all of a sudden the FBI shows up and can confiscate the money.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of these things, the hackability. You know, how do you get around that? What, you know, this is the theme to decentralization, right?
Right.
The anonymity of it. But it sure doesn't seem that anonymous though, right? And so how do you kind of think about those things, and what do you guys do to try to not end up in that headline that we're talking about?
So I got like three angles to this. The first angle is the first time I heard anything about Bitcoin. It was 2013. I was sitting across the table from the Winklevoss twins, and they were with Kathleen Moriarty, who is kind of a legend in the 40X space, and they were trying to bring a Bitcoin ETF to market. And so my wife reminds me quite frequently that if I put 10 grand into Bitcoin then,
the Morningstar analysis. If you did put 10,000 yeah. this one thing, right?
Right.
Yeah. To which I tell her.
And you would have hodled.
Well, no. To what I tell her, I probably would have been stuck in the Mt. Gox problem, which is the first right, example of what we're talking about here, right? So
I'd probably sold it 20 grand.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I mean, I'm out at 14,000.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah, right.
I'm thinking about wings and beers.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Like, exactly. Yeah.
So in either case, no, all kidding aside, it's absolutely something that we pay a tremendous amount of attention to. And I think the recent hack and the 3.6 billion stolen, the analogy I like to use for us traditional finance guys is the dive bomb in the bag of cash.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Why did they do that?
Yep.
Well, the bomb went off. Then you have a bunch of cash that's been dyed purple or whatever color it is. Haven't done it. So I don't know.
Okay.
And maybe you even
so that's a tie dye shirt you're wearing.
Exactly. Exactly. Or maybe they have dye on their hands. And so, the person that did it and the money that was taken. So, crypto does that with every single transaction. And so there's a lot of talk about regulation and the White House executive order and making sure that we're kind of leaders in the marketplace and there's kind of consistency across the different regulatory agencies. But what I can tell you is that the Department of Justice does a really good job of sniffing out fraud. Mm-hmm. And if there's going to be a transaction, a trail of transactions on the blockchain when something nefarious does happen, eventually they'll be caught. And it took a long time, but the DOJ does a good job of sniffing out fraud.
Yeah.
And so I think...
And usually they convert to fiat. Usually that's where
that's when it happens.
If you stay out in the chain,
exactly. Right? But eventually it has to be converted into cash, and people get caught. Now, to answer your second question, so I think largely the notion of blockchain technology and Bitcoin is a place for nefarious activity and laundering money, et cetera, is just not true.
Well, Larry Summers told us that $100 bills are the same thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly.
It's not shocking that, the people who control the system don't want something that competes with the system.
Exactly.
My small side note that I got stopped at a bodega with a $5 bill that the guy, it was crisp. The guy's like, this is fake. And I was like, listen, man, if I was going to make fake money, it wouldn't be
five Lincolns.
Yeah. Right? Like, can we go on something bigger? But anyway, side note. It was in a bodega as well.
I guess that's where strange. You pass your five.
Yeah, exactly.
Unmarked $5 bills, at the bodegas.
Yeah. Launder your $5 bills at bodegas.
Yeah,
there's your strategy. Okay. But in either case, to point to what we do, we have nearly 40 billion in assets, right? That are in, products that have cryptocurrencies in them. And we absolutely take it incredibly seriously. Our info security protocols. I don't go into any shared networks. We're really, really conscious to protect our network, which is number one. And then number two,
which is why we're using a double line computer to record this right now, because they wouldn't let him use it for this one. So.
And the reality is we have a partnership with Coinbase and, have a very strong, relationship with them and ensuring that the protocols that are in place, with how our assets are stored and protected is, absolutely, the best in the business. And so we pay a lot of attention to it. We spend a lot of money on it, and we need to make sure that, our investors are investing in our products with the highest degree of confidence. So we certainly don't turn a blind eye to it. I know I made a couple of jokes there, but it's really serious, The other thing that I would say about it is, maybe you own, some fund. You have no idea where it's custodied, probably. Who knows? I don't know who Double Line partners with. Maybe it's State Street. Maybe it's Bank of New York. Maybe it's U.S. Bank. Maybe it's J.P. Morgan. Whatever it is.
Nailed a couple of those.
Yeah. Yes. Like, whatever.
But it's different. It's different for different products.
Right. So whatever it is, that's not a concern of mine.
Yeah.
But the difference is people are, paying attention to where, the assets are being custodied, because it's a different, it's a different regime, and it's really important.
Yeah.
So, Dave, you were talking about regulation a little bit earlier, and it just made me think about our current environment here, where policymakers are looking to start to institutionalize various regulations around crypto. But also, we have this real world example of one of the key fears that some of these policymakers have around digital assets, and it's in their use to potentially circumvent these regulations and laws. So, when we think about some of the sanctions and the asset freezes and the asset seizures of Russian assets or sanctions targeted towards Russians in general, how is it really faring in terms of real world today? Being able to circumvent these laws if you do have these digital assets.
Yeah. So the first thing I'll say, it's awful when a humanitarian crisis, elevates a positive aspect of anything, right? Sure. It's awful.
Yeah.
But, when you see in Ukraine aside, Russian conflict aside, even something like, Venezuela, right? Or even right now, it's a good example. A friend of mine was in Argentina, and you can get 100 Argentinian pesos to a dollar. But if you bring an actual dollar, like a greenback, they'll give you 205.
Yeah.
Because they need the currency that's going to be stable.
Right.
Right. So, the to answer your question a little
bit
more.
Which is crazy. Like, that's a 50% haircut that they're willing to take on it up front.
Right. Like, it's crazy. I mean, think about the desperation if you're there. And it's very real. And the government is saying it's okay.
Yeah.
The government is saying, we welcome it. I believe they call it the green market. So yeah. It's kind of open. There's two sides to the coin. The one side of the coin is it has totally decentralized, and governments are worried about kind of end running their financial markets or the monetary policy or whatever. The flip side of it is, and I think like the crypto OGs, if you will, would hate the idea of a Bitcoin ETF because it's bringing
you're putting it into the financial system,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. But that's okay. Right, it's a different application of it from my perspective, and so I don't necessarily think that every application of it has to be totally decentralized, and all of those awesome benefits in a decentralized function, let's say where somebody needs it as a currency in a different regime, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah,
and the acceptance of that and the value of that in those markets will only increase its value as a store of value. For our application of it in the US markets. And think about, my grandparents were immigrants. My dad was first generation American here. And think about the wonderful opportunity that, this melting pot that America allows for immigrants to come to this country and bring money back to their home country. And think about what their options are now, right? I'm gonna come here, I'm gonna work super hard, and I'm gonna send my money back to my home country. And I'm gonna get 10, 12, 15, 20% haircut by the time I send it via Western Union or some sort of money transfer portal.
Yeah. I think someone showed that if you look at the fees in Western Union, I wish I remember where I saw this on some blog or Twitter, whatever. And he actually showed that if you go back to one of the first Western Union transactions, it was actually almost the same commission back then as it is today. Right?
How is that?
Yeah, which is crazy, right? We talk about innovation and everything, but just to wire money. I'm always amazed that the bank wants to charge me to wire money. But it's okay for me to mail a check.
I know.
Isn't the wire more eco-friendly?
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, so I digress, of course.
Sherman Union, 5%.
Hey, I don't know if compliance will allow us, but if Lau would quit cheating on me, maybe we could actually, get together and have a Sherman Lau Union, and we could even come inside of that. Dave, it's always awesome to see you and talk to you. You're someone I really respect in the business. And I think, people like you are helping bring credibility to the space too. So thanks for spending the time with us. I could talk to you for hours and I will. We'll just take it offline and we'll put a cocktail in our hands to do that. But before we let you go, I've got to introduce you to Sam's favorite part of the show.
Oh Jesus. What do we got here?
Oh, we didn't prep you on this.
So, okay, let's go.
So Sam, let him know.
All right, Dave. So my favorite part of the show is called Sherman Says. And it's where I will offer a series of alternating prompts between you and Sherman, to which I hope to get a top of mind response that's concise and informative at the same time and gives us some insight into your inner thinking. Okay. So to give up the a layup here for Sherman to provide the example, I'm just going to come out with ETFs.
Wait, is that to you or to me?
It's to me.
That's to Sherman.
And yeah. I try to answer these in one word and I can't. So I'm going to say... institutional acceptance.
All right. And back to you, Dave, with spot ETFs.
Bitcoin.
All right. Back to Sherman with alternative investments.
Crushing it. They are.
Over to you, Dave, with alternative coins.
Oh, Solana.
quantitative tightening.
Scary. But then again, I have a sample size of one, right? So the last one didn't work out so well. Brainerd scared the crap out of me last Tuesday. The Fed minutes scare the crap out of me. So I've got a lot of crap scared out of me right now due to quantitative tightening.
All right. Let's see here. Back to you, Dave, with about NFTs.
Oh, a little scary for me.
Fortune favors the bold.
That's right.
I can't stop using that phrase. I love it. Sorry.
You got to have the walk, though, too. And then you can't be smiling when you say it. So,
sorry. I'll work on that. I'll work on that.
All right. All right. So here's the next one for you, Sherm. European energy.
A disaster. Hopefully America can get over there and help them out. Problem is, it's expensive. It takes energy to transport energy. It's very pricey. And we've got to figure out a better way to do this stuff. So as you said, the humanitarian crisis, Dave, it's not just in Ukraine. It's spreading globally, you know, so it's very unfortunate.
Yeah. I'm not supposed to talk.
You can talk. Thing. You can talk.
No, I mean, I can tell you when I was at Alerian and watching energy go, I mean, watching oil prices go negative was like one of the more surreal things that I've ever seen. You know, my career was wild.
We talked about it. There's a Sherman Show episode of Lau trying to fill up his swimming pool with oil. Trying to wave it in at negative 26, and he just couldn't get it done.
Back it up.
I told him, I don't think you're going to cover the cost of what it is to fix your pool, but you know, hey, it's worth a shot.
And keep the kids and the pets.
But you remember like the tanker storage, right? It's like crazy. Commodity arb traders. Like, I mean, it's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. It is a weird world. Anyway.
All right. Back to you, Dave, with Ethereum 2.0.
Ooh, the merge. Very exciting.
All right. And then since you guys mentioned cocktails, the last one for each of you. Let's see, Sherman, what are you going to sip on that cocktail hour?
Let's see. I'm trying to get into tequila because everybody seems to be into this. So I'm trying this silver añejo, which seems weird, but I've been drinking it lately with club soda and a lime. And it's not too bad, but sometimes if it's a little too tequila-y, it gives you that little gag reflex. So I still have the issue with a little minor one. That's, I'm going to try that one for you, Sam. I see your face and you look like you're about to gag. So maybe we'll just go vodka soda. We'll keep it clean.
I'm a big fan of cucumber water.
Dave, don't get me started.
Dave.
There's water in here. The first thing I said, does it have damn cucumbers? There's things floating in it. And you guys all know my aversion to cucumbers. We'll spend another Sherman Show on my aversion to cucumbers. And we won't need a guest because I can rant for 45 minutes, as Dave already heard this morning.
Yeah, I guess just don't use that as your chaser because it'll just be kind of a Texas hedge, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. You put tequila and then chase with cucumber water, it's not going to be pleasant.
Yeah. All right, Dave, on that note, what's your favorite cocktail to close the show?
Closing the show on a cocktail. I'm not a cocktail drinker, but on a very, very rare occasion, I will have a dark and stormy. Extra wine. Okay.
All right. That's better than what my one of our new hires mentioned when we asked the same question. He's told me green tea. So it's a step better, I think.
We were like, I don't know. Should we rescind the offer?
Yeah. You know,
like if your favorite cocktail is green tea. There's nothing wrong with green tea, by the way.
That's
but
right.
He's like, a cocktail. Yeah, it was a cocktail. So I thought you said drink. Oh, cocktail. And then I can't remember. It was like an old fashioned on the rocks. I was like, you've never had a drink.
Yeah, Manhattan on the rocks, I think.
Manhattan on the rocks.
Yeah, Manhattan on the rocks. Yeah. So with all this, it'll also give us a little bit of insight if Scotty T actually listens to this, or if the North Tustin internet doesn't allow him to.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I'm gonna go see him.
Is that him?
Yeah.
Well, you gotta tell him. You gotta say, okay, it come to us. And we'll give him $100 or something like that. So you know if he listens.
So yeah, there we go. So Dave is willing to give you $100, Scotty T. That's $99 to keep it under the compliance threshold.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
If you listen to this. So feel free to reach out to Dave. So Dave,
in Bitcoin.
On that note, how can people get a hold of like the stuff you guys put out, your information? What's the best way to get in touch with Grayscale and you and most importantly?
So grayscale.com is a really awesome wealth of information. All jokes aside, know what you're investing in. you know, every product is different, every issuer of every product is different, and there's a ton of resources out there. So reach out to us or your other issuers to get the insights.
All right. Well, so thanks everybody for tuning into the Sturman Show. You can catch us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, Google Play, some other podcast apps that I don't have no idea about, probably something on the blockchain that Dave's going to teach me about one day. And more importantly, you can catch these on youtube.com/DoubleLineCapital, all one word. You can catch the videos. Unfortunately, Dave and I are sitting too close together today to record this, so we won't have the video, but we do have a videographer in here that has promised me that he is going to turn this into a South Park animation. So fortune favors the bold to our dear listeners.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
The audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media at doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk.